Happy ending, nice and tidy. It's a rule I learned in school. Get your money every Friday. Happy endings are the rule. So divide up those in darkness from the ones who walk in light. Light 'em up, boys. There's your picture. Drop the shadow.
This is Jennifer Stone with Stone's Throw. The new year, fasten your seatbelts, boys and girls, but we are free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last. A would-be dictator is off to the golf course. Let us hope that his gang of stormtroopers will find other ways to play other countries to wreck, or anyway, they won't wreck our infrastructure for a while. They are a real threat. However, the male supremacists, the white male supremacists, patriarchy is an addiction. We're all addiction to male supremacy, this ominous shadow over the land. Fascisti, waiting in the wings, the future looms. Maybe not yet. Maybe we have time to go out for pizza. In the meantime, Democrats rule. Wrong word. Democrats govern. Grown-ups in the White House, in Congress, in the Senate. It's a win-win. Georgia is a sure sign that people... too many people have had enough. We can celebrate now. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Wow, it's regular people, just folks, you know, and more experienced than almost any other pair of administrators. Talk about professionals with capital P. They fit the job description. Yes. They read the Constitution. Kamala Harris is, she's a progressive dream come true. I have to say she is the one I've waited for all my life. History has happened. There's a lot to think about, a lot to hope for now. As the poet, the mystic, William Blake once said, kiss the joy as it flies. I always like to think of that, you know, when people come into your life and out again. And, you know, this time we have the joy of a win-win. I hope it lasts. I hope it stays with us. The first response to the election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris is kind of euphoric, but maybe that's not for all of us. I had a few dreamy moments, but the joy flies. Always it's on the wing, and there is a new struggle, the next struggle. And of course, we don't win, but we change the world. And I've been reading a book by DJ Trump's niece, Mary L. Trump. It's titled, Too Much and Never Enough. She paints the family. Mary Trump paints the family of Fred Trump and his children, destroyed by their father's cruelty. One of them was Donald Trump's father. Now, what interested me most was Mary Trump's promise that DJ Trump, you know, would be very violent if he should lose the election. She said he take the half the place with him. Make a horrific mess of things on the way out. I had no doubt. We all see. Messy. He's a positive wrecking ball. I don't think that the ex-president, the Trump person, the Donald, I don't think he has yet acknowledged that Joe Biden is the president of the United States and that he lost an election. The scene in Washington in recent week or two and the last month or two, year or two, is the result of years and years of misrule. Wrong, 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 right. It's not the right word. Rule. Don't use the word rule. Use the word govern. Years of negative administration because the guy at the helm he not only couldn't steer, he didn't know where the helm was. Ah, the books will be written for decades. I dread the movies. Our present state, well, some people think it's a pseudo-civil war. There are similarities to the period in the early 1860s. I don't know. I think, well, it's more than just an exercise, this business in what happens when society fails to keep its house in order. We drop the ball. Here come the crazies. Civilization is not a frill. Ah, you have to work at it. There's that possibility this time. What did they call that? A learning moment, an educational moment, time to educate the young people. All about a protest, democracy at work. While on the other hand, there's this insurrection, which is a threat to all of us. So many TV shows confuse the protests for justice and Black Lives Matter movement with the riot mentality that smashed the Capitol window the other day. Generally went nuts. So many people watch and they just think it's all of a piece. And we know that some of those guys out there are just doing it for the fun of it and so they could walk around in those silly clothes. Maxine Waters seemed to me to be the hero of the day. The only one to... well, not the only one, but she had the guts to say what was happening. Anyway, it always takes so long after one of these scenes for the blood to dry, you know. People to look and see what actually happened. It might take weeks, months, decades. Then when the brouhaha dies down, we have to find ways to make things clear. That's why I'm counting on Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They know how to tell the public what is going on, and they promised to do so, particularly where the daily reports on the state of the virus that is threatening to kill, I believe, very soon, 500,000 Americans, North Americans. I shudder when I, 500,000. In any case, what I want to talk about is language, because it's the language that's done so much of the damage. The language itself is under threat. I saw some protesters, so-called Black Lives Matter people, on the street, and they were being hauled into vans up in Seattle there. The vans were not marked, and the guys dragging them off, I assume, were cops, but they had no identification on them, and their faces were half-masked. Now, I guess they could call that the virus, but I heard that the people on the sidewalk there, they were yelling to these people being hustled into the unmarked vans. They yelled, "Use your words." They yelled this so loudly, and I didn't know what was going on. I guess they were silent, and the cops were dragging them, you know, across the road and across the sidewalk, so they could have yelled out. There would have been an audio record, so the protesters should, yes, have yelled out their names, words for what was happening to them, cries for help, who they are, from whence they are. I don't know. Yeah, call the police, everybody. Call the police. Anyway, never mind. In the middle of the night, a couple nights ago, I thought, you know, I have to go back to Toni Morrison. We have lost her so recently. And I have to go back again and remember about the words and how words are weapons, either for good or ill. It's where it starts, boys and girls. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can kill me. The first Black American writer to win, well, first Black woman American writer to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. I don't know when was the last. Long, long ago, 1993, she made this terrific speech, and I have some of it paraphrased here, and some of it I excerpted, and I'm gonna read it to you so that you understand how serious this thing is about oppressive language. Toni Morrison says that oppressive language does more than represent violence. It is violence. It does more than represent the limits of knowledge. It limits knowledge. Now, whether it is the faux language of mindless media, whether it is the malign language of law without ethics, or language designed for the estrangement of minorities, hiding its racist plunder in its literary cheek, it must be rejected, altered, exposed. It is the language that drinks blood, laps vulnerabilities, tucks its fascist boots under crinolines of respectability and patriotism as it moves relentlessly toward the bottom line and the bottomed out mind. I will repeat, yes. As it moves relentlessly toward the bottom line and the bottomed out mind. Yeah. Sexist language, racist language, theistic language, all are typical of the policing languages of mastery. They do not permit new knowledge or encourage the mutual exchange of ideas. In her essay that I have excerpted, I have a whole bunch of marginalia here about the the dominant submission paradigm, the master narrative, how it's always the story of the boys and what's happening to their lives. No exchange of ideas. Anyway, Toni Morrison has more to say. She uses a story that she tells to young people about an old woman. She's old and blind, and the young people don't really know what to ask her. She is keenly aware that no intellectual mercenary, nor insatiable dictator, no paid-for politician or demagogue, no counterfeit journalist would be persuaded by her thoughts. There is and will be rousing language to keep citizens armed and arming, slaughtered and slaughtering in the malls, the courthouses, post offices, playgrounds, bedrooms, boulevards, stirring, stirring, memorializing language to mask the pity and the waste of needless death. There will be more diplomatic language to countenance rape, torture, assassination. There is, and it will be, there will be more seductive mutant language designed to throttle women, to pack their throats like pate-producing yeast with their own unsayable, transgressive words. There will be more of the language of surveillance disguised as research. Ah, yes. Yes. More, yes, surveillance. Politics and history calculated to render the suffering of millions mute, right? That's what it's all for. They get out their notebooks and their recorders, and they put it all in there and use it. Yeah. To tighten the ropes. Oh, well, never mind. Toni Morrison says more. She talks about the suffering of the millions mute, and then language, she says, is glamorized to thrill the dissatisfied and bereft, thrill them into assaulting their neighbors. Arrogant, pseudo-empirical language crafted to lock creative people into cages of inferiority and hopelessness. Yes. My marginalia here, yes. The corsets of conformity. I love all my iteration underneath the eloquence, though, underneath the glamour, the scholarly associations, however stirring or seductive. The heart of such language is languishing, or perhaps not beating at all. Oh, Toni Morrison goes on to talk about the young visitors, the youth that have come to ask her, what's going down and how it's going to be. She writes, the old woman would not want to leave young visitors with the impression that language should be forced to stay alive, merely to be. Language can never live up to life once and for all, nor should it. Language can never pin down slavery, genocide, war, nor should it yearn for the arrogance to be able to do so. Its force, its felicity, is in its reach toward the ineffable. Word work is sublime, the old woman thinks, because it is generative. It makes meaning that secures our differences, our human difference, the way in which we are like no other life. We die. That may be the meaning of life. But we do language. That may be the measure of our lives. The visitors ask the old woman more and more questions. They say to her, they ask her, is there no speech, no words you can give us that helps us break through your dossier of failures? Through the education you have just given us, that is no education at all, because we are paying close attention to what you have done as well as to what you have said. Attention to the barrier you have erected between generosity and wisdom. We have only you, say the young people, yes. We have only you and our important question. Is it something you could not bear to contemplate, to even guess? Ah, don't you remember when being young meant that language was magic without meaning? When the invisible was what imagination strove to see? Oh, they ask, why? Why didn't you reach out and touch us with your soft fingers and delay the soundbite, the lesson, until you knew who we were? Did you so despise our trick, our modus operandi? You could not see that we were baffled about how to get your attention. We are young, unripe. We have heard all our short lives that we have to be responsible. What could that possibly mean in this catastrophe the world has become? Where, as a poet said, quote, nothing needs to be exposed because it is already barefaced. The world, I would say, in my marginalia, is not only nude, it's naked. It's just plain raw. The young people go on here in her wonderful lecture. She gave this lecture in 1973 in Stockholm, getting her Nobel Prize for Literature. The late, great Toni Morrison. The young children speak to the old lady and they say, our inheritance is an affront. You want us to have your old blank eyes, see only cruelty and mediocrity. Do you think we are stupid enough to perjure ourselves again and again with this fiction of nationhood? How dare you talk to us of duty when we stand waist-deep in the toppling of your past? You trivialize us. Oh, tell us, is there no context for our lives? No song, no literature, no poem full of vitamins, no history connected to experience that you can pass along to help us start strong. You are an adult, the old one, the wise one. Stop thinking about saving your face. Think of our lives. Tell us your particularized world. Make up a story. Narrative is radical, creating us at the very moment it is being created. We will not blame you if your reach exceeds your grasp. If love so ignites your words, they go down in flames and nothing is left but their scald. Or if with the reticence of a surgeon's hands, your words suture only the places where blood might flow. We know you can never do it properly once and for all. Passion is never enough. Neither is skill. But try. For our sake and yours, forget your name in the street. Tell us what the world has been to you in the dark. In the dark places and in the light places, and don't tell us what to believe, what to fear, you old woman, blessed with blindness. You can speak the language that tells us what only language can. How to see without pictures. I will repeat, yes, literature, that's what literature is. How to see without pictures. Language alone protects us from the scariness of things with no names. Language alone is meditation. Tell us what it is to be a woman, so that we may know what it is to be a man. what moves at the margin, what it is to have no home on this place, to be set adrift from the one you know, what it is to live at the edge of towns that cannot bear your company. Tell us about a wagon load of slaves, how they sang so softly. Their breath was indistinguishable from the falling snow. And how they knew from the hunch of the nearest shoulder that the next stop would be their last. Oh, it's quiet again. Yes, the children finish speaking. The old woman breaks their silence. She says, yes, how lovely it is, this thing we have done together. Some of this is from the Nobel Foundation, 1993. Yes. I will be back on the air one of these days soon. By the time I'm back on the air, the world may have changed again. It may have turned over again. I get the fourth Tuesday of every month. In February, I would have the fourth Tuesday if that weren't a marathon day. I guess I'm going to have to work harder on my podcasts. Now, you can get my my profound pronouncements on on kpfa.org. You gotta www.kpfa.org, and the podcast is what I have used for my on-air broadcast, plus a lot more goodies. You can find me any old time, Jennifer Stone podcast. Yes, this has been Jennifer Stone. Aha, with another episode of Stone's Throw. Till next time, go easy. And if you can't go easy, go as easy as you can.
Happy ending, nice and tidy. It's a rule I learned in school. Get your money every Friday. Happy endings are the rule. So divide up those in darkness from the ones who walk in light. Light 'em up, boys, there's your picture. Drop the shadows.